Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. And just a reminder, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the others, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But guys, how are you doing? I was in California for the weekend.
Hey, what's up, West Coast?
I missed you.
How was it? How was the con?
Oh, it was great. I got on like a really good sleep schedule where like by Sunday morning, I was up at 4:30 a.m. in an IHOP. So doing great. Doing really great.
You woke up in an IHOP?
Alex, that's also not how the time zone works. You were breaking the time zone.
No. It was 4:30 there. So it's 7:30 in New York. So I went My wife did.
But on Sunday, though, I'm saying.
Not to throw her under the bus, but my wife did get it wrong. Don't do it. Where she was like, I think it was three hours afterward. She was like, have a safe trip. And I was, 6 hours early. She was like, have a safe trip. And I was like, you are 3 hours off the 3 hours off that you would have been anyway.
You're throwing under the, you're sweeping under the rug the fact that you are at an IHOP at 4:30.
Yeah.
Alex,
let's talk about my wife. Let's
stop normalizing your behavior.
With time zones. It's crazy how wrong she is on time zones. No, I was, here's the thing is the Starbucks around the corner was closed.
Also a bad option, I would argue.
So I wandered back to an empty IHOP. I was there at 4:30 in the morning, completely alone. By the time I had finished my terrible breakfast, the song...
How dare you slander your refuge, West Coast refuge.
The radio played, and I've never heard this on the radio before, the radio played Auld Lang Syne, which I didn't know they played outside
of New
Year's.
What were you listening to?
I don't know. I was like, this is the saddest thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life.
Wow. Alex, what happened to you? People
say you don't party anymore. Come on! I hop 4:30 in the morning? Come on, baby!
Did you book a room at the International House? Is that why you were staying there?
Yeah, I only speak 2 to 3 of the languages, pancakes, waffles, French toast, but they allowed
me to
stay.
That's all you need. That's all you need right there.
Yes, a stray bullet has the right question. Are you sure you weren't delirious? There's no way you were not inebriated on lack of sleep.
I could not believe that.
Syrup.
Was happening. Auld Lang Syne. Are you allowed to play that outside of New Year's? I don't think so.
Yeah. You play anytime you want, man.
Maybe that's the power.
An NPR special on it that you were listening to in your cracked out state.
That's the most likely option. They're doing a deep dive on the origin of Auld Lang Syne.
That's what it was. An NPR special. Well, listen, this is a NPR special of our own because we're going to do a deep dive into
There you go. There's the connection I was looking for.
He's got a new book from Image Comics coming out May 7th called Free Planet. Ladies and gentlemen, Aubrey Sitterson, hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for having me
back. It's been a while.
Nice to see you.
Very excited to have you here. Very excited to talk about this book. But before we get into it, to make things continue to feel delirious, every week on the show we have a professional chef down in New Orleans, named Brett Macris. This is true. It's not one of our classic April Fools, Aubrey.
No.
Either crafts or creates a cocktail for the show. And this week, he created one based on your comic book. Free Planet, All Others Pay Cash. Vodka, orange liqueur, lime juice, grenadine, soda water, and a lime wedge.
Nice.
That's refreshing.
Amazing. That sounds delicious.
It's only 4 p.m. here in Los Angeles, but later tonight, that's That's on tap.
Get it, yeah, bro.
That's nice. Yeah. Way to nail the time zone.
Wait.
You're better than my wife. All right. Come on.
Yeah. Would you stop? Yeah. Also, you can drink at 4, man. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's a Tuesday. It's early. It's
exactly.
Early.
Yeah.
Tuesday's for drinking.
Tuesday is for comics, Pete. Excuse me. And Tuesday is for Free Planet. Not this Tuesday, but eventual Tuesday. Let's talk about the book. This is a wild book. We got a chance to look at it. We're not going to. I don't want to spoil anything you don't want us to spoil, since it's still a month and change until it comes out. But what is the pitch for the book?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It's about the first completely free planet in human history. They've just won a brutal revolutionary war against a corporate-dominated oligarchy with tendrils stretching out. Ooh, look at these production values.
Yeah,
tendrils stretching out throughout the galaxy. They is the only place in the galaxy that you can find a uniquely potent energy source, which has guaranteed their freedom, but also made them a target of multiple intergalactic. The only people defending the planet, you see them right there on the cover. That's the Freedom Guard. They are all, each and every one of them, revolutionary heroes. They all fought in the war. They're all deeply committed to the dream of a free planet. But just like each one of us in this great nation of ours, different ideas about what complete freedom actually entails. And that's what drives all the drama, all the big explosive military action, all the geopolitical maneuvering, and of course it's a space opera, so there's copious amounts of interpersonal drama as well. But it all revolves around that. It revolves around freedom, sacrifice, authority, discipline, and how the four of them interact
with one. I was just going to say, this is awesome. I really enjoyed the crap out of it. I wanted to ask you, what team are you? Are you, Falcon, Bear, or Wolf? Because I'm Team Wolf. I was just wondering.
Are you a Wolf guy? I think I'm a Raven guy.
Raven.
So what Pete's referring to is the Moiety system. It is a matrilinear kinship scheme that was invented by one of the members of the Freedom Guard, Victor McGlue. He's the handsome black-haired gentleman right up there on the far left.
He's the McGlue that holds this whole thing together.
Yeah, I mean, that's one opinion. There's some folks on the team who would disagree with you about that. What Pete is mentioning and alluding to is just one of these, Robert Kirkman calls it rich, intricate world building. And who am I to argue with him?
Right? I mean, he's rich and intricate.
Rich, it's both. It's the...
He knows comics, that guy.
He knows what he's doing over there.
Yeah.
So what Pete's referencing is just one aspect of this research-led approach to building out the world of Free Planet. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, that's where my question was. Like, it feels like there's I'm curious how you developed this. It feels like there's a lot of inspirations that maybe came together here, maybe topicality. I was reading this, I was like, oh, it's interesting that this book starts sort of where, like, a Return of the Jedi ends. Like, they've won, they're free. Like, I feel like the temptation, or I guess the more expected choice, would be to show the rebellion winning or getting to their victory and then following through into the aftermath. And you were like, no, I'm starting right when they are building their new government.
No, why? That's exactly right. You know, I love big, epic, revolutionary and war stories. I think that stuff's great. But it's those kinds of narratives are linear. Right. And they generally have a point of view. We wanted to do something more complex, richer than anything Jed or I. Jed's my co-creator on this. Jed, the amazing Jed Dougherty. You're looking at his art right now. We wanted to do something richer, more complex than anything we've done before. And for my part, that meant research. Boatloads of research. I've got props. Boatloads. This is how big. Yes. This is at least how big.
This is your Bible?
These things. No, this one's Spanish Civil War, and this one's a new one. It's about the history of the Greek city-state.
Wow. Spanish Civil War.
Yeah, nice. So the Spanish Civil War was a big influence, right? And because the Spanish Civil War was one of the last times that there were genuinely a bunch of different options on the table for how to structure our world, right? Before we got locked into the present state. That another big influence was The Dawn of Everything by David Graeber and David Wingrow, which is very much about the nature of freedom and how we gave up what are actual profound freedoms, like the freedom of movement and the freedom to create new social relationships. And so we wanted to start from a place and wanted to build out a rich enough world that there was complexity, that there was ambiguity, right?
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, each of those folks on the screen you see there, they have completely different ideas about what freedom entails, and that extends to their entire worldview. We worked up dossiers for each and every one of them that are less about backstory and biography and more about philosophy and religion and politics and where they agree and where they disagree with one another. It's less a get from point A to point B narrative and more a exploration and a rumination. We've built out this world. We've plopped these fully developed characters into it. And then the drama arises naturally from all of these geopolitical things that are happening. And we get to sit back and watch the Freedom Guard react to it.
Yeah, it felt like positioning for all the characters we see on the screen there, like they were positioned in a place so that they, it's almost like in improv, we talk about game, your character game.
Yeah, what's the game, yeah.
And so like it feels like all of these characters have their particular blend of philosophies, points of view, positions in relation to everybody else. And you can mix and match them in a million different ways if you wanted to.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very much the intent. And I'm glad that was the read that you got off of it. You know, Free Planet, it's designed, you know, it's we've danced around it thus far, but there's no point denying it. It's a dense book. There's a lot of text on the page, which is new for me. You know, last time I chit chatted with y'all, I was talking about Archie Judgment Day. Right, Megan is on the show. Why are you laughing? It's a great book.
No, but you're comparing Archie Judgment Day to this, so I laughed at the comparison because it's so dense.
I think it's important actually, and this is aside from just getting a chance to see all your beautiful faces once again. This is why I was excited to come back on Comic Book Club and talk about it. You know, when I was on here for Archie Judgment Day, I alluded to this new approach. Right. It was something that I had explored a little bit on Archie versus the World, which is another Archie book I did with actually Jed, my co-creator on Free Planet. And what's different about this approach, even aside from more transformative, even than the extensive amounts of research I've done, which does genuinely change how I write comics, but even more transformative than that, instead of coming up with a story, coming up with a narrative, breaking it down into issues, breaking it down into scenes, breaking it down into panels, I had a new step, and I did this on the Archie work, and it changed everything about how I approached writing comics. And that is, I thumbnail, not after I've scripted. A lot of writers do that, and I had done that previously. I thumbnail before I script.
And really?
This is crucial because it allows me, instead of saying, okay, well, now I've got this narrative, this story that I'm in love with, and I have to figure out the best way to cram it into 20 pages, into four and a half panels, into one panel, right? Instead of doing that, which locks you into, I think, staid and quotidian storytelling rhythms and styles, right? Quotidian.
Good. Talk about having a philosophy. Let's go.
You read all these big books, man. You got all these crazy words stuck in your head. Instead of that route, what you're able to do as a writer is to envision the page. The envision spreads. And I'm sure y'all noticed when you're going through Free Planet, I've got one right here. The book is loaded with big, humongous, information-rich spreads. Charts and graphs, maps, graphics, infographics, diagrams, you name it. Loaded up with this stuff. And the reason we're able to do that is because I'm never in a place of like, oh crap, we have two pages and we need to move all these pieces around. No. I look at each individual. I'm working on issue 7 right now. And this is what I do. Boom. I'm ready to go. I've written a bunch of notes about what's going to go in the issue. Now the difficult part comes, figuring out the most exciting, visually overwhelming way to present all that information such that every time you turn a page, the reader has to stand back. The reader wants to stand back because it's just so much.
It's almost like a tapestry. It feels like you're laying down the history here for this. Absolutely. Even though your characters are living it, you're showing it in a way that would be preserved in like their history book almost.
That's exactly right. I mean, and the story is told anecdotally. There are individual scenes, right? And so it could feel choppy, but what holds it all together, the connective tissue, we call them the historical captions, and they are written like a historian, like in the style of a historian. That's another big impact from all my research. I'm trying to mirror that style, that academic style of writing from someone who is looking back at the period that we're observing. And this was important to me because I'll be honest with you. It sticks in my craw that people do not see me as a smart writer. People see me as an exciting writer. No, this is for real. People see me as an exciting writer. They say Aubrey gets the best artists. His books always look fantastic, which is like a hilarious backhanded compliment.
Right. That's really funny.
Nobody talks about me and how smart my work is, and that offends me. So Free Planet's going to fix that. And the way I identified to fix that is whenever people talk about smart writers, you look at it, and what do they all have in common? They're British.
Buttoned up shirt and a plant behind them.
Yeah, that's right. So exactly. Come on, man. I got big glasses.
Yeah, you're doing it. You're playing the part.
But crucially, jokes aside, the thing that they all have in common is there's lots of words on the page, right? Mm. For a lot of comic book readers and a lot of the comic book industry, a book's not smart unless there's a ton of words on the page. And that was difficult for me because I've always written, as Pete identified earlier when we were talking about the Archie Judgment Day, I write breezy, man. I like to leave room for the artist to do their thing. And so the task was to come up with a way that text wasn't just being exposition. It wasn't just describing what was on the page, but it added something new. And that's where we landed with the historical captions. And the idea is that the historical captions describe the era and the kind of larger context of what's going on in the world. And hopefully they're interesting in and of themselves. I certainly think they are. But crucially, what they provide is either confirmation, additional context with which to understand what you're seeing, or oftentimes undercutting what you're seeing in the actual story, right? In the actual panel-to-panel story, such that readers can kind of draw their own conclusions and have an additional or added or more nuanced understanding of the conflict that's taking place on the page.
Well, so you've worked with Jed before, your artist. What was his reaction when you're like, real quick, I'm going to thumbnail all of the images and also put an intense amount of words on the page?
So first and foremost, so two things. One, I never send the thumbnails to Jed.
Oh, okay.
That's our secret.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thumbnails are for me. The thumbnails are to ensure that I am writing a comic book, right? A lot of people say comics is, it's a series of images put together to make a narrative. I don't think so. That's storyboards, right? Comics is the presentation of the page. And if you're not using the page, you're not utilizing comics to its full extent. And doing thumbnails is a way to ensure that when I'm writing, I am writing to all of the many strengths of our beautiful medium, right?
Can I jump in there? Because you mentioned it before that most people do them after they've written the script.
If they do them at all.
Yeah. Explain to me the difference there. Or why would someone do them afterwards? Is it like checking their work? Like, this makes sense. Yeah. I did a good job.
I think that's it. You know, for me, you know, there were times in the past when I would write a page and I would say, can this work? Like, will this look okay? Right. And I would sketch it out and I would do thumbnails. And once I started doing thumbnails, I immediately started doing them more because, you know, if as a writer, you write a script and then you thumbnail it, I guarantee you're going to find problems. You're going to find things that you could have done better. Even if it's just as simple as like, wow, there's no way to put a good close-up in here because of the way that we need the aspect ratios of these panels to work. Simple stuff like that. Getting back to Alex's question about Jed, the other thing that's important to understand about Jed is that I met him when he was assisting Howard Chaykin. So not only is he used to extensive amounts of abuse. Howard's my beloved comics uncle. I say it in fun. But not only was he used to these very, very stringent high standards for what comic book storytelling is. And all of the theory that I'm talking about right now, this is straight from Chaykin, right? This is 100% how Chaykin approaches his books. And it's why they look and read so differently than other people's do. So Jed was up for the approach. And with regard to the captions, right, like these voluminous historical captions, this approach wouldn't work with someone who's not Jed, because what Jed does, one of the many things that Jed does that's phenomenal is when he does his, and just like when I do my thumbnails, when Jed does his layouts, the captions are in there. He leaves, he builds the pages around these captions. So it's never a situation where we're just like slapping stuff on over Jed's art. Actually, we do, because he does a lot of background art. But it's designed such that the captions can be part of the visual presentation, as opposed to just this separate element floating over top.
Well, and I will say, just I know that sounded like a mildly aggressive question. It really comes.
No, I love it. Fuck you, Alex. What do you got next? Yes.
Let's go. Let's go.
Yes, I knew this was going to happen. Come on.
It comes off really well in the comic. It works incredibly well with Jed's art. And I was really struck, even before you said this, about how these are very texty pages. But I mean, I'll bring one up here. Yeah. There's clearly enough space to see exactly what's going on through Jed's layouts, which are really impressive for anybody listening on the audio podcast. It's one of the characters talking at a podium, and there's 5 different panels that are broken up by triangles that are all showing different scenes throughout this planet and throughout this world. It's
really well done.
It's really, really well done. This feel like there's a little bit of
this page blows my mind. I think it's so cool. It's demented, right? Like if you actually like think about the eye lines on this page, which is, you know, when you talk about,
I love how you can follow the balloons though too, you know.
Well, 100%. I mean, and you have to, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's, but the fact that without connectors, without additional tails, there's only 2 tails in the entire spread. Your eyes go left to right, down, then right to left, then back over to the right. And this is alongside the panels. They're not just normal panels. They're triangular slashes. There are items that pop over them. And all of this stuff, it's not random. It's not just done because it looks cool, though it does look cool. But all of those pieces are essential to ensuring that the reader's eye travels where they're supposed to go. And as cool as this stuff looks on the screen, it's only a shadow of the experience of reading it in print. That's why we did these ash cans. We gave them out at Comics Pro at the big retailer convention, because I thought it was crucial that, you know, it's a book designed to be read in print. It's a book designed to be read in the periodical format, with, you know, inclusive of our design, like our interior design of the book and everything. We got back matter in each issue, right?
Yeah.
Essays about the world. It's designed to be read in single issue format because we use the medium, right? And reading comics on a screen is a poor substitute. And as proof of the fact that we're onto something, these things, they're both like $150 on eBay now. It's bananas.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's a different thing, and I'm enormously proud of it. And so forgive me if I veer into arrogance here, but there's nothing else like it. There's nothing else like this on the racks.
Oh man, now I feel bad. I never say forgive me if I veer into arrogance, and I should all the time. Yeah,
it's a really intimating that of you for years.
It's a really good way. It's a really good way to get out of being arrogant if you make a joke.
I mean, I do that part. I do that part.
If I can get back to throwing fuck yous around a little bit. One thing I did want to kind of circle back to, you talked about the art, and you talked about how you almost insulted when people bring up the art. I would like to defend artists, though. I mean, the pace that we're looking at is phenomenal, and your writing's unbelievable, but if the art's not there, you have nothing that pulls you in. You know what I mean?
100%. And I have massive regrets if I implied otherwise. I don't think so.
Definitely not. Right? No, not at all.
Don't worry about it.
Visual medium. I know for myself, you know, like every once in a while every 3 to 5 months on the internet, there's a round of what's more important, writers or artists. And I think it's stupid, A, because we go through it all the time, and B, because it's obviously artists. It's obviously artists, right? Mm-hmm. I buy books with great art and terrible writing all the time.
Yeah.
I never do the opposite.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever. Right. My chip on my shoulder is less to do with the role, the roles, because obviously Jed is more important in Free Planet than I am, and more to do with my approach and how the comics that I've written in the past have not passed muster to be considered artful and deliberate creations of a thinking writer. And I think that has to do with genre, that has to do with aesthetic, that has to do with how I have spoken about and presented that, you know, if you ever saw my promo videos for Beef Bros, that's not traditionally what is viewed as a intelligent, smart, cerebral writer, a guy with a, you know, a headband and a swinging a mace around, right?
Yeah. I feel like people coming out of this book are not, you're not going to get that question anymore. Like, there's a level, and I do want to know, like, just how big this world's going to get. But I have to follow up on the artist-writer thing, because I feel like the magic of comics is that two things. Like, it's the synergy and the fact that everyone does it a little bit differently. That's crazy. When people make movies, they sort of use all the same stuff. And you're talking about, like, I added thumbnails, and he added the spots for the narration going. I'm like, that's wild when other people are like, I don't do any of that. And you were still arriving at a comic book form at the end.
Well, to use the movie metaphor, man, I think that it's the difference between studio slop and the work of auteurs, right? I mean, like, that's what we're talking about, right? And, you know, yeah, you look at movies, everybody does them the same way, as long as they are existing within this very narrow frame of US dominated Hollywood style filmmaking, right? But as soon as you start to expand out from that, there's all kinds of different approaches, right? And just similarly, right? Similarly to the studio approach to Hollywood movie making, the in vogue and de rigueur approach to comics making in the US direct market is assembly lines.
Right.
Right. It's not about making the best comics. It's about finding the way to make the most efficient comics such that they can go from writer to penciler to inker to colorist to letterer as quickly as possible to get those some bitches out every month. Right. And if that's what you want to do, the approach that I was running down earlier is ideal. Right. You need a writer to break a story so that way the editor can judge it, whether it's good or not. And then they can pass, and then they need to write it in a format that it can go to any artist, and they don't have to have any kind of back and forth with the writer. And what does that mean? That means about 4.5 panels per page and a splash every once in a while. And so that's what comics are, typically structured around, getting back to movies, the same exact Robert McKee 3-act structure stuff that
save the cat.
Studios, the same stuff that Studio Slop always uses. Free Planet's something different. It's something better. Well,
and that's really, I think you're right about all the very commercial side of it. But what I was sort of referencing was that, like, you did thumbnails and that informed your work. On a movie, you don't hear a writer being like, hey, mind if I just DP this next bit? I just want to check it out for a second. And then I'm going to take that back. Like, that's the magic.
I don't know enough about film to, like, rattle guys off. But there are for sure auteurs, film auteurs who write the film.
Right, yes. That's the director is what Justin is saying.
Yeah, exactly. There are people, I was saying guys, there are people, there are folks, right? folks who do exactly that. They do everything. And that's the approach that Jed and I have taken on this book. And, you know, it wouldn't be possible without folks like Vittorio Estoni, our colorist, and Taylor Esposito, our letterer, and Mark Kaufman, our designer, who have been game. They've been up for it. We came into this thing with a very specific vision of what this book was going to look like, how it was going to function, and how it was going to be different from not only everything we've done, but everything else we're aware of on the racks right now. And Vittorio, Taylor, Mark were sweethearts and so patient with, I have a friend, can I drop a name?
Of course.
So I was hanging out with my dear personal friend, novelist and MacArthur Grant Award-winning Jonathan Lethem. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Brooklyn King.
Well.
He gave us a blurb. I'm very proud of it.
Shouts. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I was very stoked on it. But I was chit-chatting with him. I was like, yeah, man, I'm a terror. I'm a torture chamber to Vittorio, our colorist, and Taylor, our letterer. I micromanage them on everything. And he said, no, Aubrey, you're an auteur. And I said, oh yeah, that sounds better. Let's go with that. Cool. That's much better than micromanager.
Yeah. We got a question here from the audience. Nat says, I would be curious to know how Aubrey feels about guided view, vertical scrolling comics, etc.
I don't think they're comics.
There it is.
Period.
Strong answer.
I don't think they are. You know, like I think, and this is a Chaykin thing too, right? The fundamental storytelling unit of comics is the page. And if you have guided view, if, you know, vertical scrolling comics, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, right? Like, it's a different thing, but it loses what I think is essential to comics. Let me pull up this other example, because it's one that's not in the preview, so I like showing it off, right? Mm-hmm. This is impossible in guided view. It's impossible in vertical scrolling. It's even impossible if you're just reading it on a tablet, because there's no way to see this whole thing all at once. And comics is not just a sequence of images. Again, that's storyboards, right? Comics, the magic of comics is the way that those images interact with one another on a page. And things like guided view and vertically scrolling comics do not offer that. I say it's not comics just to be provocative. Of course it's comics, but it doesn't function in the way
It's limiting.
Well, it is. I do think, I mean, not to push back on that too much, particularly vertical scrolling comics, I do think people are doing
pushing back on me so much.
Man, you guys are at it, and I love it.
Listen, man.
But P loves it more.
I was on Sunday morning and mentally I never left that IHOP. I just think we've had a lot of vertical scrolling comic folks on here, and I was hesitant at first because I agree with you that it's not the same thing, but they're using the format, I think, in really interesting ways.
100%.
I agree that it is 100% different from a floppy comic book, the way you read it, the way you interact with it, but it's its own format. And I think that's part of the reason that the publishers that we're used to, regular comic book publishers, but like your Marvels, your DCs, your Image, etc., have sometimes had trouble jumping into that format because it's telling stories in a completely different way with a completely different language.
I think that's absolutely right, Alex. You know, there are things that can be done with vertically scrolling comics specifically that cannot be replicated in traditional print comics. Absolutely. For my money, the interaction of panels on the page, though, is something that's so intrinsic to the power of comics that I hate losing it, right? And I will say that my theory on why big traditional comics publishing companies have had a difficulty making inroads into vertically scrolling comics is very simple. There's no way to monetize it.
Right.
Because when you collect those vertically scrolling panels into a book, they look nightmarish. Right?
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, it's just the same panel shape over and over again. And that is, there's nothing wrong with that when it's a choice, right?
Yeah.
When it's a layout choice meant to convey something narratively or emotionally or thematically, that's all fine and good. But when it's just a matter of course, it gets exhausting to a reader.
Well, and anytime we have someone who works in vertical, they always come on like, and then we wanted to publish a volume, and wow, that was a nightmare. That was a real nightmare. I can't believe it. And they like go pale, like they've clearly lost years converting their vertical to a publishable work.
While I'm running down entire formats of comics, let me pause to say that Riley Brown and Fabian Nicieza did a I was shocked. So I bought their Outrage volume specifically because those guys are so smart and have done so much great work in traditional print comics. And Riley had told me, he's like, yeah, man, we worked really hard to do it in such a way that it'll translate well. And damn if they didn't, man. Like, it's still like the fact that, like, you know, still though, there's not big splashes. There's not big intricate spreads the way you can get in traditional comics, but it does not have that exhausting, plodding sameness that vertical comics when put in print often do.
I've got another question here from the comments. Matthew Schofield says, I loved Aubrey's previous collaboration with Jed Doherty, Savage Hearts, and I'm looking forward to this a lot. I love Jed Doherty's work. How did Aubrey first discover his work?
Uncle Chaykin. Unky Chaykin. Yeah, man, I was, shit, what year was this? It must have been like 2009, maybe? 2009, 2010. I was coming out for San Diego Comic Con, and Howard says, oh, come out early, and you can come hang out with me. He lives in Ventura, which is north of LA County, for people yeah. who aren't deep in the weeds on Southern California geography. But yeah, so I went up to go hang with Howard for a few days, and I met Jed, who was working for Howard at the time as an assistant. And Howard is, he doesn't have it so much anymore, but at the time he was one of like two or three people that I knew of who worked in this old studio model, right? Mm. Out in the US context, I mean, like every manga artist works that way, of course.
Right.
But he would have dudes, including Jed, doing all kinds of stuff, right? Pull reference, you know, draw this thing, drop in these patterns on Photoshop, clean up these panel borders. And he just had a team of people. And it was how Howard at the time was able to do two books a month, legitimately. He could get a book done. He could get a book drawn in 2 weeks. Think about that, right?
Wow.
And I met Jed through Howard then, but it was many years before we actually started working together. And we talked about stuff a lot, but Savage Hearts was the first piece. And it was, you know, for folks who haven't read Savage Hearts, it's a sword and sorcery romantic comedy with a big burly barbarian babe and like a lithe weird little beast man. It's very funny. We had a blast doing it. But you know, it's very niche. It's very weird. And it plays very much to both our interests, but I understand, again, you know, let's get back to the thing we were talking about earlier. I understand why people might look at my oeuvre and think, oh, that guy does like brightly colored big
That guy's a dumb dumb. That guy doesn't read big books.
He's a moron. So yeah, so now I'm doing the podcast round showing off my library.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. How big that is.
You know, Savage Hearts was instrumental in Jed and I learning how to work with each other and how to utilize each other's strengths. And every single issue of that thing, I found a half dozen new strengths of Jed's. And the same is true of our the Archie versus the World issue that we did with Archie, which is like a Mad Max Fist of the North Star take on Archie. And, you know, all of that stuff went into Free Planet. Because now I know, you know, there's a laundry list of amazing things that Jed can do. And it's just a matter of writing to them and putting them in service of this richer, more complex thing than we've done previously.
Wow. This, awesome. Just to get back to the book for a second, or actually to jump ahead of it, anything else you want to plug? Is there anything else people should be checking out for you, or is Free Planet really the thing?
Free Planet's it, man. Free Planet is an enormous amount of work. It's been years in the making, and I've been teasing it for months. And
congrats,
you
know, man.
Thank you, brother. We've got the first six issues completely.
Ooh, look at that.
Right? I printed it out.
Right. Come on, man.
So, but it's not enough. This thing's meant to be ongoing. I want the length of Free Planet. I mean, it's not meant to be ongoing. It is ongoing.
Yeah, I was going to say that because that was my question. Yeah.
It's launching as an ongoing series. I want the length of Free Planet to be measured not in issue numbers, but in feet. I want a full look. Can you see my? Oh no, I'm the wrong side. Oh no,
there it is.
It doesn't matter. I got my Cerebus volumes down there. That's what I want.
Yes, you want that Cerebus heat.
That's right. I want thick. Full shelf of Free Planet. So this is the focus right now. It final order cutoff is in 2 weeks, which means you have 2 weeks to call your local comic shop and tell them that you need a copy of it. This is important for two reasons. One, it's going to sell out. People are underestimating the demand for this thing once people see how different and strange and complex and rich this thing is. So it's going to sell out. Calling ahead and reserving a copy, subscribing to the book, that makes sure you'll get one, but it also lets retailers know that there is demand for this.
Order
thing,
more.
Which will help them out. Order more, man. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Awesome. Aubrey, this book is so great. I'm very excited to read all.
Thank you for having me, boys.
36 volumes, all 36 volumes of it, something like that.
Yes, at least. At least. Around 36 volumes. That's right.
Awesome. Aubrey, have a great evening.
Great to talk to you, man. Have a good one.
All right, there we go. Once again, as he said, Free Planet, you got to order it in the next couple of weeks to make sure your comic book shop has it. But it is coming out May 7th from Image, and it's great. It's wild. For anybody who's listening and not watching, as we mentioned, the art is phenomenal as
so
well.
Yes.
Really, really cool. And everything he was saying about the pages, just every page feels like a different experience.
So, well, I loved hearing about how the thumbnails of it all.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
Work. And before we actually move on, I do want to highlight the joke that Aubrey said before we started, which was, I love that Pete has long boxes, Alex has Funko Pops, and Justin has women's shoes behind him. And it's true. Those are the three genders.
But that's one thing before that's we move show. On, are you guys a raven, bear, or wolf? What's your...
Hold on. Let's actually move on. If that's
what? You don't want to answer that question that I have for you?
I do want to answer that question. But I also want to answer our next section, which is your
audience questions. Okay,
all right. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, or Instagram, and we will get to them, as well as whether you're one of those animals you mentioned. But what are you guys drinking? Justin, you seem to be drinking something delightful.
I was having a lovely tequila and... Aperol with a little lime, and then I'm kicking over to my champagne of beers.
There you go.
It's almost summer. The weather's popping. It's time.
You guys remember Fontana's? Come on.
Longhorns, yes. There we go. Very cool stuff.
Remember doing a show in a metal bar?
Yes, I do remember that. What were the animals you were talking to us about, Pete?
You know, it was in the book. I was referencing the comic book.
Sorry.
It's either, you know the animals because you fucking read the book.
It's bear. Well, you also
bear,
said it wrong
raven.
To the writer. Bear, well, raven, and wolf.
Yeah, I said bird. It's a raven. I'm sorry, you know?
I mean, here's the thing. We don't actually know what the...
Wait, Alex was going to answer.
It doesn't matter. Well, we don't know what the... stepping into a trap. All I'm saying.
Yeah. No. I'd like to be the raven because I would love to talk about this nevermore.
Oh.
I feel wolf energy.
All right.
For myself.
I thought Alex was going to say bear because he likes honey or something like that.
I mean, I do. That's not true.
There's no doubt he likes honey.
I watched on my Red Eye Home, I watched a whole 15 minutes of The Beekeeper talking about honey. Boy, that movie doesn't waste any time with the bee stuff, and it doesn't waste any time with literally anything else. It just jumps right into it. It's wild.
It's funny you could call that movie not a waste of time. It's really, that's a funny way to position
that. To be fair, I could only watch 15 minutes of it while I ate a curry chicken salad croissant that they handed me at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Handed you? Or
I don't know. I panic ordered.
Alex, what's happening?
What is going on with you?
I had a weird weekend, guys.
I'm worried about
food
you.
Food choices are
topsy-turvy. You're topsy-turvy right now.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely threw me for a loop. It was a lot to pack in a weekend.
I can't believe that those things came in a croissant. That seemed like a lot.
Oh, that was such a bad choice. I was doing fine.
I just picture you on a plane being like, this was a bad choice.
It really was. Well, I got it because
it
was like, none of the other choices seemed any good either. And I was like, all right, I'll throw this in my bag. And as soon as I ordered it, I was like, I'm not going to throw a chicken salad sandwich in my bag for the next couple of hours. What am I talking about?
Alex.
Then I had to eat it while watching The Beekeeper.
I'm very concerned for our third hour of podcasting tonight.
Oh,
because, like, if you're starting here, it's going to get too... We need a tempo.
This is going to be a fun night.
Yeah, I could actually talk about some highlights from WonderCon if you'd like.
Well, it wasn't a question.
Haven't we hit
it? It wasn't a question.
Oh,
it
wasn't
right.
a question.
Yeah, maybe someone will ask it.
I guess we'll see what happens. Why don't we kick it off with this one from Stanley? Do any of you enjoy playing practical jokes?
Yes.
Ooh, you do.
I hate April Fools.
Have you done any sweet pranks today, Justin?
Here's the distinction. and this is something that I got in a tiny argument with my wife about. I was like, I don't do it today. Today's the last day I'm going to pull a practical joke. I do it normally because I'm a jerk. Today's the day that everybody gets to be a jerk. Mm-hmm. So this is the one day that I'm off.
This is like the St. Patrick's Day where it's like, yeah, this day is great. For the rookies.
I used to love it when I was a kid, but very specifically, like, not only has it gotten, I think, worse over time, particularly as companies are like, oh, it's going to be very busy on April Fool's doing a prank, so let's just do it 3 weeks before, which is not a prank. That is, you are lying about something. That's all you're doing. But it also, well, as a journalist, it became impossible to work on this day because so much is coming out and people are freaking out about things. It's like, I can't, it's just this constant stream of nonsense that's happening on the internet.
I will say, this is the first year in a while where I'm like, oh, everyone's too stressed to even do that right now. Like, there was almost no. The only one that I saw was
less.
They're like, I saw the gummy bear, making your gummy bears big prank going around again. I was like, shouts, that's a fun one. But otherwise, I saw almost nothing today.
Yeah, most of, I'm trying to remember what I got. I'm on a lot of, like, from my last job, a lot of food press mailing lists, and none of them were, their pranks were like, haha, we're doing 2-for-1 pizzas.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Hey, here's we added a couple extra pepperonis.
Schreckler says, what are your favorite tabletop games, comic-themed or not? And I'd like to take Pete's secret quiz. I promise I'm awake. Great, Schreckler, you have to do this. Just drop the number of skulls in the chat.
Yes.
And for anybody listening for the first time, I'm not going to explain that.
Oh, okay, big time. All right, big time. You used to yell at me all the time for not doing that.
I think it's
you
much funnier.
You fucking hypocrite piece of shit.
I'm sorry. You have to agree, though. You have to give it to me, Pete, that it's funnier to say drop the number of skulls in the chat, right?
Yes.
I'm not giving you that. I'm not giving you that.
I guess we can say, bullshit. Pete has it. Pete has
you
a
always
quiz.
Would bust my balls where I wouldn't set something up that we've been doing forever. Every time you would fucking nitpick.
This will be a great fight for you guys to have over the phone, or maybe like you guys could punch each other in person or something, but I'd rather not be there for sure. But I will say, the Pete's question is, how many skulls are in his Punisher shrine behind his laptop? And Schreckler has to guess. So let's buckle up for that. Favorite tabletop games? I don't really play a lot of tabletop.
Ping pong?
I thought you said pig pond, and I was like, interesting. What is pig pond?
Right. Are we talking about, like, tabletop games. This is not my favorite, but my son and I were playing it the other day, and it's pretty fun. It's a game called Here to Slay, and it's a card game where you put together, like, a D&D party, like it's cute little animals on the cards. And either you have to build all 6 members of the party or slay 3 monsters, and either way you win. So it's a pretty quick game. It's like 20 minutes. But all of the cards are very fun and cute, and it's a good time. And he beats me every single time. Michael Tillman says, you've been watching through Star Wars with your son. What's the next franchise? Is it the up-and-coming cultural cinematic benchmark, John Carter, Warlord of Mars?
Yes, Michael Tillman. Roasted. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. We've been talking about that. We still have the 3 Rey movies to go. And there's a couple of things. He was interested in Indiana Jones, so we might watch that next. Talked about, like, generally Steven Spielberg movies because he hasn't watched most of any of them at an age where he'd remember them. We also talked about, like, Mission Impossible might be fun. And
fun.
I'm not quite sure about Fast and the Furious yet. That feels like a bit much.
Yeah, it's too
bit
early
much at
for
the
that.
Beginning. Once you get to 5, you're like, that's fine. That's just superhero movies.
Start with 5. Who cares? Chaos. Mission Impossible is good. There's a little bit of art in some of those films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're very good. They're good action movies. Straight Bullet
says Cloverfield franchise.
The Cloverfield. Yeah, we'll start with the 3rd one that they put on Netflix after the Super Bowl. Aside from IHOP or your bed, where else would you rather be tearing it up at 4:30 a.m.?
Great question. It's funny that just as a New Yorker, I used to be on a once a week basis out until the all hours.
Because you were a bartender.
Well, that, and I had a show every Friday night, and we would go. The show was 10:30 to like midnight, and then we would just go out.
Too young.
I mean, that wasn't that long ago. But I will say, now New York is different now. Bars do not stay open. They're only
what? Are you serious?
Most bars are fully shut between 12 and 2.
It's not New York City. If you don't see the sun,
New York is known as the city that gets pretty sleepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is post-COVID, New York's hours have changed. I mean, certainly there are places that stay open late, and you, of course, can find an all-night thing to do, any number of clubs. But the days when your neighborhood bar would be like, all right, it's 3:50, time to go home, not happening.
Wow. Good times, man.
I'd say taking a nice walk in the park. At 4:30.
Well, but here's the thing, Alex. You're getting up at 4:30 for some reason, and you still haven't made it clear what's up. But
I don't
know. Then you're like, "Oh, I was in the time zone. I got up at 4:30." I know for a fact you get up at 4:30 in New York as well.
Yeah, I know.
Especially if a new Disney show's dropping.
It's not your kids waking you up. It's you
It's my body. Frederica Rosa says, "If you had to do a podcast on a subject without co-host and without guests, what would you guys choose to talk about, and which of you would do it for the longest?" Wow. I wonder. I don't want to put anything in Frederico Rose's mouth, but this seems like it's mildly inspired by the Cory Booker not filibuster that's going on, where he's up to.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's still going. I haven't checked, but like
he broke the record. We were talking about it. He did. Yeah, we were talking about it in the comments during
Great.
Chat with Aubrey.
I'm not going to take credit for this, but the previous record was Strom Thurmond railing against civil rights. So as many people have talked out, the fact that it's Cory Booker breaking it, that's pretty great.
Later.
Yes. So the reason I bring this up is because it's been a frequent meme online of like, what could you talk about for 19 hours? What could you talk about for 20 hours? So obviously that's not that, but what could you extemporaneously talk about without co-host and without guests?
I mean, comics, the X-Men, probably just walking through. I mean, for a long time, we did a bit where I would very quickly say facts, like recaps of X-Men issues. I could just slow that down a little bit and talk a long time.
Yeah, I mean, similarly, I think I told this story I think it was this summer where I host these things and Brian Park, these graphic novel book club chats, and usually there's a guest or usually there's somebody to riff off of who works for Brian Park. But this time it was just me solo talking about Court of Owls, and I just kept going and going and going. And afterwards I was like, oh, I guess that's the thing I could talk about for 45 minutes. There we go.
The Court of Owls specifically. Wow.
I mean that, but like Batman, I could definitely talk about Batman at length for a while.
Well, maybe to make the question a little more specific, what part of the comic book universes could each of us talk about the most?
I still wanted to answer the first part of the question. I always wanted to do a storytelling show where I would just kind of tell crazy stories.
So you're saying yourself is the answer?
I guess so. That seems weird to say that like that. The way I worded it sounded a little bit better.
Well, you said I would tell stories.
They wouldn't all be about me. You know what I mean?
Would some of them be about like Frank Castle?
I don't know. I could definitely do a long time on Wolverine, Spawn, Punisher, you know, Hulk, anything like that for sure.
Well, let me take the opposite tack. What about, let's say, not comics? What is something not comics that you could talk about at length?
Ooh, good.
I'll say Oreo flavors. You guys go.
I mean, that's nice definitely one. True. And good. I think history will be kind to Alex Albin's Oreo filibuster, the great Oreo filibuster of 2025. I feel like I could definitely talk about movies, movies throughout the years, any number of TV shows. I mean, here's what it comes down to. I feel like you could spin me like a top. You just give me a second. I'll talk. I don't know.
I was hoping to get some. I could definitely talk about upstate New York. I could talk about garbage plates.
I could talk about Pete. I could filibuster about Pete.
What's your TED talk about? Pete LePage? All right, here we go.
Where do you start that story, Justin? That would be,
the
you
day I met
the
this
supreme
fun.
Vegan dream. That's where I started.
Oh, wow.
Backwards from there. Provocative Ambulance. Gee, Alex, what was WonderCon like?
There it is.
Weird. It's a weird con. I was expecting something different because it's from...
Where is it?
Anaheim, California, which is okay, in Los Angeles. You. And it's from the same people who do San Diego Comic-Con. So I was kind of expecting like San Diego Comic-Con light, and that's not really what it is at all.
Oh, interesting.
I think he meant that. That was our guest. Okay, I think he meant that.
Yeah,
he was not roasting you.
Because when you said WonderCon...
Oh, interesting, and then turned away. It seemed like you were about to do something else.
No, because when you said that, I was thinking Comic, you know, San Diego Light.
Yes. But no, it's not that at all. It didn't really have much of a movie or TV presence. It didn't even really have much of a comic book presence. Like the big guests there, they had Dan Slott, Mark Waid, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee stopped by for a day. But I fully expected, like, being in Los Angeles, you would be able to get tons of movies, tons of TV shows, tons of comic book creators. They've had, like, the thing that Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, and I think Jerry Duggan have been doing, where they're like, Street Art Festival has better guests than there were, I think, at WonderCon. And this is nothing against the guest, but, like, it turned out there were a lot more people there than I thought. They just weren't highlighting them at all on the webpage or making it clear who was there in the con program or anything. First thing I did when I got there is I walked over to Artist Alley because I like to, you know, see who's there. Do we know anybody? I want to see who don't I know. I want to look at some art. Artist Alley was straight up like selling stuff like the little kawaii dolls and whatever else. And that was it. And I was like, so I guess there's nobody here. It wasn't until the last day I went to the opposite end of the con and there was a little area where like Mitch Drads and Jeremy Adams and a couple of other people were sitting. And I had no idea they were there until Sunday morning when I was wandering around looking for something else.
Oh, interesting.
So
you didn't explore it properly is what happened.
I walked through. The other thing is that the floor is weird. It's about the same, I'm very bad at estimating footprint, but like imagine New York Comic Con. It's like about that side, but it's all in a like very bare bones warehouse with a bunch of walls in even weirder places than the Javits Center.
Huh.
Plus, all of the tables had numbers on them, but then there were pillars everywhere. The pillars had other numbers on them that didn't correspond to the numbers of the tables. So again, it was like impossible to find anything, but it was mostly...
So it was like section 23, table 1.
Yeah,
sorry,
like...
Alex, were you on mushrooms for the whole weekend?
It really felt like it. I didn't spend a lot of time on the floor, but I was like, I don't know what's going on here. There was this one...
Did
comic
you get
his
drugs while
it
you
sounds like it? It sounds like you're reading a police report about a long weekend.
It felt like I was trapped in purgatory because I was like, oh, there's that place that sells hats again. I don't know how I got back here. All right.
Did you get a hat?
No, I didn't. There were no good hats either.
What?
I don't know. Weird. Anyway, highlights, though, a couple of things that were nice.
You got to see Matt in real life. That's pretty cool.
One of the highlights is I got to see Matt Schofield in real life.
Hey!
Yeah, I was about to get to that, Pete.
I'm sorry, you were so cracked
out. Do you
want
to turn away and like play on your phone or whatever you're doing before?
Oh, slam.
I was just adjusting my seat.
Oh, all right.
Just got to get the lumbar right.
Yes, I got to see our great supporter and awesome dude and former guest, Matt Schofield. He gave some...
He's real.
He's real. His wife is real and very nice as well.
Wow.
He gave, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but he may have given me copies of Steamroller Man to give to you guys.
Hey!
So there you go. But that was really lovely. What else? The Mark Waid did a panel on Saturday morning, I think, which was 50 answers and 50 questions in 50 minutes, which was very fun. So it was just like people throwing out questions
that's awesome.
To the audience, and he was answering them off the top of his head. So that was a fun time.
Did he say hi to you?
No, he was running all over the place. We texted a little bit, but we were never able to meet up. The Todd McFarlane, I went to see his spotlight panel, which was wild. It was basically him doing like his entire autobiography live on stage. And it's just like, he's a showman. that is what he is. And so everything was clearly these stories he had told 1 million times. It was 100% Todd McFarlane's one-man show. Yes,
was it like exactly. Ali's one-man show type kind stuff?
Kind of, but legit.
It
was great. It was great.
Shots fired.
So that was very fun. There were some great stories in there about everybody that he's worked with. And it was really funny, too, because like, he got up to, and he's like, and here's, he got up to like breaking into Marvel. And then I think he got to about Amazing Spider-Man 300. Then he had 5 minutes left. And he's like, okay, so anyway, here's my family. Here's Spawn. And then there were 300 issues of Spawn. And the last several decades. And he's like, then we found an image. And that was pretty cool. So
wow, fast forwarded over that.
Like right. A 3 to 5 hour version of this.
He front loaded his like senior prom or something. Like what happened?
I don't know. And then interview wise, I don't know if people have checked this out, but if you want to check out some podcasts, I talked to Simon Rasiopa, who is the showrunner of Invincible. So that was fun.
Oh, wow.
Up at our Podvincible feed. Got to ask him about the music choices. Got to ask him about some other things.
Were you cool about it or did you just slam him about it?
I'm not the one who's constantly
slamming. Okay. Yeah, I'm the... Yeah. But he knew about me.
He was super nice. It was great chatting with him. Also had a very interesting interview with Chuck Austin, who you might remember from a much maligned X-Men run back in the day. He has a new Comixology book. And on the Comixology panel, he said some pro-AI statements that weren't really followed up on. So we had a relatively extensive chat about it.
Because you're very anti.
I am very anti. I'm 100% anti. We talked about it. And he was very receptive really interesting to the feedback. So it was not necessarily changing his mind, but I was happy we did that. Talked to Matthew Roberts, who we had on the show a couple of years ago, and that's up in the podcast feed. And then the other thing, I went to the Gremlin Secret of the Mogwai press room.
I hope you didn't get wet.
I did not. Oh, I got wet, baby.
He got wet.
I got.
There's 50 Alexes running around out there.
Oh
now.
Boy, that's what it is. This isn't even the real Alex.
Now I got to talk to Joe Dante, director of Gremlins and Gremlins 2. And during the conversation, organically came around to, I was like, well, you know, Gremlins 2 is kind of like, I've always felt a parody of Gremlins 1. And he's like, okay, here's the thing. And I'm paraphrasing here, but he told this whole story about like, when I made Gremlins, everybody hated it. The studio didn't like it. They didn't understand it. They kept being like, cut that part out. That doesn't make sense. This isn't going to work. This is going to be a bomb. This is going to be terrible. And then it came out and it was a huge hit. And suddenly they were needed Gizmo merchandise and Gremlins merchandise and everything else. And next thing they were like, when's Gremlins 2? When are you going to make Gremlins 2? And he's like, I'm not going to make Gremlins 2. What are you talking about? There's no Gremlins 2. We don't have another story. And they're like, come on, Gremlins 2, Gremlins 2. And they kept pushing and pushing and kept being like Gremlins 2 until he was like, okay, fine. I'm going to make Gremlins 2, and it's going to be the Gremlins 2 that will show you why you should never make Gremlins 2. And that's the movie he made, and I've never felt more validated in my entire
life. That's awesome.
That was pretty great. Cool. So yeah, there you go. WordCon, the cosplay culture, I will say, also on the positive thing, not a lot inside, but outside, they have a really nice area, like right at the front of the con with these steps where everybody was taking pictures and hanging out. And that was very cool to see. That was really nice.
Awesome. Any highlights? Was there like
cosplay highlights?
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't cosplay, but it ties into the cosplay. A lot of free roaming Star Wars droids.
Oh,
like
wow.
A lot of people doing the remote control, but kind of hiding things. So,
oh, interesting.
And it wasn't just R2 units. It was a bunch of different droids, which was pretty neat.
Did you kick them because you hate AI? Were you like, fuck
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I was like, you're stealing our jobs, man. no, there was... the thing that was really cool cosplay-wise was there was a bunch of guys I saw several times walking around with like... not C-3PO, but like 3PO units in the backpack, you know, like the way Chewie carries him.
Sure.
All painted in different ways, and they moved. So like as they're walking behind them, the C-3POs are turning their heads and sort of like shaking their limbs a little bit. It was really neat.
Complaining.
Yeah, nice. Complaining, being really annoying.
Classic C-3PO.
So yeah, there you go. It was... it's an all right. I think it's a weird con. I don't think I would go to it get.
Oh, wow.
If you live in LA, I think like it's not crazy crowded. So it's much more like a local con than what I would have expected.
That's interesting because I definitely have always considered it an elevated con, but it sounds like it's not.
No, that's what I expected, but it wasn't. Maybe it was just this year. I don't know. This is a follow-up question from Nat. It says, do different major Comic-Cons feel like they have different cultures? How do they feel similar or different? I've only been to New York Comic-Con 100%.
100%. Yeah. Very different. Almost like everyone every city is different.
Feels different.
Well, but I don't know. I mean, like, New York Comic-Con and C2E2 have sort of similar bones, but I guess you could say that Chicago and New York have similar bones. Mm-hmm. But I think every con is quite different. Every con has learned different lessons from the other cons and is haphazardly applying them to their con to the point where it's just like, oh, this is all a mishmash of ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's different, like, sections of types of cons depending on what they want to focus on. Like the ones that are, no, we're actually focusing on comics are very different from, say, the Wizard Worlds, which are really much more revolving around celebrities showing up, getting autographs, meeting the celebrities, spotlight panels for them. And you can kind of like almost feel a con leading in one direction or the other based on the amount of space that it provides on the floor, based on what else is around it, based on who is there and what they're running towards. I mean, obviously, like, I prefer the ones that are focused on comics. That's more fun to me.
Well, let me ask you this. What's the most comic book Comic-Con?
You know, I really liked Baltimore Comic Con when we went down. That felt
interesting.
That felt very comics focused to me, which I really liked. I thought there were a lot of really good guests there. I haven't been to Heroes Con, but I've heard that's very similar, just in terms of like having a ton of comics guests. And I don't know, New York Comic Con, I will say, like, went through a period. Straight Bullet says, you want to read it?
No, like how NOLA Comic Con focused on the petting zoo.
That was crazy. There was just animals in the middle of the thing. You're like, what?
A very intense paid petting zoo and the Ghostbusters. The Ghostbuster scene at NOLA Comic Con is intense. But finish what you're saying, Alex, because this is what I was thinking I was going to say.
Oh, what I was going to say about New York Comic Con is like it started very focused on the comics, got into the celebrity culture. And now I think in recent years, it's crazy packed, but they've figured out how to sort of serve all of those masters at the same time, because they do have some really big movie and TV stuff, mostly TV more than movie. They have a huge video game thing. They have a huge like playing card game thing, anime thing, but also they have a like, I don't love the fact that Artist Alley is all the way in the basement, but Artist Alley is like its own con at this point.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I feel like New York Comic Con, and I guess Artist I'm a bit Alley. Of a homer, is the most balanced con. And I think it's where comic creators do a lot of business. San Diego, they do a lot of business there, but it's also like just a little too much happening. But I feel like that's where people can be like, I have a meeting here, I'm meeting this person there. Like, they're like literally making their moves for the next year. And that's cool. I feel like that's a fun vibe for them.
Yeah, I think what they figured out is like rather than being like, oh, let's downsize the comics so we can upsize this other thing, it's enough for everybody. And probably a lot of that has to do with the renovations of the Javits, where now they have enough room to do all of those things. But yeah, like I was saying, like, if you just want to do comics, you could just do comics. If you just want to do activations on the floor, you could just do that. So it's pretty good. Schuykler, by the way, says over under 20 skulls.
Is that his?
This is more of a guide.
Is he want a hint or is he guessing here?
He's saying, is it over 20 or under 20? I mean, that's not a true guess.
I'm asking for a number. I'm not, you know what I mean?
Is that 20 skulls? 20?
How about 20?
Because 20 is correct, because that's why I'm saying.
All right, wait, is there a second question then?
Nope.
What?
He won.
Oh,
congratulations, Schuykler. You have won a Zalbin swag bag. That's right. Zalbin will pack a special swag bag for you and send you one.
We talked about this
years ago. Yes, we did. Years ago. Actually, what's funny is This quiz has been going since 4/2/24. We were off by one day for the 1 year anniversary of this quiz. There are still two quizzes left.
Wow. What? Pete, you're an absolute maniac. You had a Punisher, a secret quiz at our live show that was 10 insane questions. And you had it going for 5 years and no one responded to it.
That's right.
And now you have a quiz that was also a secret, that you gave a lot of hints to, that was one question.
That's right. Because you guys gave me so much shit about it.
There's not even a happy medium.
The other two quizzes have more questions, though.
What, two questions? I guess we'll see. We'll find out.
We'll definitely find out.
Oh, yeah.
How many quizzes do you think you're going to take to your grave, Pete? Like 8, 9? Mm-hmm. Like you die? That's what I want. Make sure in your will you list your secret quiz.
Just to tie this up with a loop, Shoy Claire, shoot me your address. I will get you a Zalbin swag bag.
Yeah!
Shouts
to the commenters all coming out about how absolute nonsense that was. Stray Bullet has the best take. One question, the answer is only something Pete would know. Accurate.
Oh boy. Amazing
work by y'all.
Great. Stanley says, have you ever been to CinemaCon? What is it like? CinemaCon is running down now in Las Vegas, and I have never been
Vegas,
there.
Vegas, baby. Vegas.
I was, when I was going to Los Angeles this weekend, I was like, I wonder if I extended my trip for a week and went to CinemaCon, but it was too late. There were no press passes.
I bet CinemaCon is sad because CinemaCon...
Oh, man. If you were extended that cracked out trip and then you had it would have been like in Vegas, oh my God, that would have been so much.
He'd be rolling come back dice. And do the show, you know?
He'd be wearing like yellow tinted glasses, rolling dice, fedora.
Inside out visor just going off to the side. You know what I mean?
CinemaCon, I bet, is a little bit sadder because CinemaCon is thrown by the movie theaters and they're sort of like, hey, what's up? No one comes to movies anymore. What are we doing? And all the studios are presenting their movies, and they're definitely saying, like, this one's definitely going to help you. And they're like, is it? Is it? And it feels like an aggressive con.
Well, and it's not really a con, I don't think, right? Like, you're sitting industry. In a theater and just watching stuff most of the time.
As speeches, but also, and talk about meetings, there's a lot of, like, meetings about, like, hey, are you going to focus on this or not? And it's sort of like, hey, can we get an extra week of IMAX on Narnia in 2 years?
Yeah, it's weird because it's one of these events that, like, it's not supposed to be for press. Like, it's not supposed to be covered. It's supposed to be for the industry. Yeah. So.
It's like how earnings calls have become this weird press thing when they were not supposed to be that. They're supposed to be private, weird corporate chats. And now it's an event.
But that said, as we're taping right now, I believe they're having the Warner Brothers presentation. Oof. So presumably there'll be some DC news that may have already come out while we're talking. And yesterday was Sony, where they revealed that Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse is coming out in 2027. In the summer, and
that was supposed to come out this year, right? This was
supposed
to
come out 2024.
Originally. 2024, right?
Yeah,
and they're pushing it 3 years. Get the fuck out of here!
Yeah, I was talking to. I told my kids this morning. I was like, "Kids, great news! The next Spider-Verse movie is coming out when you're going to be gone at college and you're going to be celebrating your 13th birthday."
Wow!
So, there you go,
dude. I can't really believe your kids are going to be in college soon. That's insane.
Not soon, just whenever the next Spider-Verse movie comes
out. That's pretty
cool. And I remember when we were there filming The Birth, holding your
face. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, by the way.
We podcasted with him, I think. I think we had Klaus Janson on when we...
And my wife was late because she got the time zones wrong.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad your wife doesn't listen to this because you'd be in trouble.
She can hear him
through the ceiling. Yeah.
Through the ceiling. And I think she was taking her revenge because she printed something during this podcast.
Yeah,
astute listeners.
There's several sheets that say April on them.
Yeah, they say like they say fuck you, Alex. Never talk about time zones again.
It's weird. It's a divorce proceedings. I don't know.
Divorce papers printed out. That's a sick move.
I'll find out later. I'll find out after the show.
Must be an accident. Question from Nat Towson though, Pete. Can you turn your camera on and see the skulls?
Oh. Ooh, we get to see the other.
This is a huge revelation. That's God, I hope to someday be invited to this.
So, first of all, that's not in front of you.
Yeah. Wait, that was it?
It was right there.
Wait, I missed it? Was that fast?
Yeah, it's the Punisher Shrine on a couple stacks of long boxes.
I thought you meant they were like you on the opposite side of
it. I thought you made hard eye contact with these skulls every time we taped this live show.
Well, when I walk up and into the room, it's one
and
of
you
my
kiss
favorite.
Each one on the top?
Yeah, good night? When you say good night to them.
Yeah, you gotta, it takes a while because you got to say goodnight to all 20.
Goodnight, Frank. Goodnight, Frankencastle. Goodnight, Microchip. Mm-hmm. Goodnight, Lady Punisher. Goodnight, his family.
Yeah.
They died.
Well, why don't we move on to our next section, which is trivia not about skulls. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. Oh, that was like a JT Sizzle music drop there. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. What does that mean?
It's yeah, doing a bad job. Yeah.
Shot at
messed
Invincible.
It up. He's saying messed it up.
It's a shot at Invincible. Yeah. Anyways, this is the part where you can win $25 to Midtown Comics online because Midtown Comics is an amazing shop and they've been supporting us for years. So, yeah. It's
oh,
a,
and
it's
by
a
the way,
time
I do want to mention, I know I said this trivia is not about skulls, but Pete will be paying tribute to a celebrity that's been dead for a while, so it kind of is.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah,
their face is gone.
It's skulls all over this piece.
Yeah, it's been eaten by worms.
Today's trivia is about the unmasking moments in comics and a small nod to the legend, David Johansen, R.I.P. Ghost of Christmas Past from Scrooge and a legendary musician.
Well, there you go. David Quinley is going to be doing it. So, Pete, you ready?
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, David Quinley. Question number one. In the Forever Evil event in 2013, the crime syndicate unmasked this hero in public. Who was it? Is it A, Nightwing? B, listen, just fill up these bins. That's the job, whatever your name is. C, Phil Philbin.
I mean, that is not a cool name.
David is saying A.
Oh, David, you got to please wait. The first one is A.
First one's A. Great.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, here we go. Question number two. What character retired and wrote a book called Under the Hood? Was it A, Night Owl? B, no, I'm not sure what old McDonald named his goat. C, Billy McDonald. Got both of you on that one. That's a winner.
You know, you make fun of Alex for making dad jokes. That was a dad joke from like a 10-year-old boy.
That's true. It's true.
A? Is it A?
A is correct. Wow. We're still going back to the same one that he wrote. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing another one.
Oh, okay. Well, question number three, the last one. What hero confessed their secret identity under oath? Was it A, Daredevil? B, cool, you like ducks and Toy Story? C, Woody Mallard?
Is this also A?
It is A.
Wow.
Wow.
Nailed it.
We did it. Congratulations, David. You are going to get a gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we'll get that off to you. Pete, what's the secret movie you were referencing?
Well, of course, I'm talking about the 1989 comedy, Let It Ride.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay. I actually know that movie.
Oh, do you?
It is funny you talked about Scrooged first.
Yeah, well, I like to reference one character to throw you off of the scent.
He really did. I can't find the scent, and I haven't found it for years.
Yes. But you have been finding comics every Wednesday, and that's going to keep going. I'll tell you what, there's new ones coming out tomorrow. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, a lot of great stuff to talk about. I'm excited for Batgirl number 6. This has been really epic. Very pumped to read this. Birds of Prey, number 20. It's been a real badass comic and such a great team on it. So still excited to find out what happens in this issue. And then two more. Daredevil, Cold Day in Hell, number 1. Oh, got a great feeling about this. And then lastly, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Silent Missions, Beachhead, number 1.
Finally.
come on.
When Beachhead can shut his mouth and just live, you know? I'm a sucker for a
silent comic. You know, a lot of people...
Is Beachhead a Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And also a military
deal? He gets,
term.
Like, he gives blowjobs on the beach, or he gets blowjobs? He gets them?
That's quite a statement when you're like, all right, soldier, what's your name? Mine's about getting blowjobs on the beach. Really? Getting? Okay.
Not giving? Sir, in this G.I. Joe unit, we both give and receive.
Exactly. Giving is half the battle, I believe.
Whoa, you can't be Beachhead, I'm Roadhead.
I'm glad you guys are having fun.
Don't worry, I'll say the same joke on the stack.
Exactly, definitely, save it for the stack. I think Roadhead is Cobra, though, right? And they fight each other. Because Roadhead's much more dangerous.
Ooh, I wonder how that fight's going to end.
It's Roadblock and Beachhead. They're two different.
When Roadhead and Beachhead fight, everybody wins. I can guarantee that.
Now, that was in G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, issue number 69, I believe.
Well, it was also a silent mission, I believe. Or mostly
not
silent.
At the end.
You guys are laughing at our childhoods, all right? It's not cool.
No, this is not my childhood. This is definitely my adulthood, though, unfortunately. Oh, boy. Let's see. I'm looking forward to Resurrection Man Quantum Karma number one.
Oh,
this looks very interesting. Ram V has been having a real run ever since the greatness of Layla Starr. I also want to shout out Absolute Green Lantern by Al Ewing.
Oh, interesting as well.
The Absolute Universe has been the main Trinity books sort of feel like of a piece, and all these new ones feel like they're going in different directions all the time. I'm curious where this one is starting and then heading. Because I'll also say, not to be such a DC dude, but Absolute Superman, I've been really enjoying the 6th issue comes out tomorrow. And that comic feels like it has the most to say. Absolute Wonder Woman, I think, is the best. Absolute Batman's fantastic. But Absolute Superman feels like it's driving at something. And so I'm looking forward to see. I feel like we're having a new arc start in this issue.
You guys mentioned a lot of great comics, so I will shout out, I don't think I'm repeating anything, but Star Trek Lore War, number one from IDW.
Yes.
Been building up to that.
A lot of building up to this.
Yes, a lot of building up, so I'm excited to see what they do with that. I will also give a shout out to, I was curious about, I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer, number one.
Whoa.
This is from Doug Wagner and Daniel Hilliard, who always do something weird and interesting. I don't always love everything they do, but I always find it kind of fascinating. So excited to see what they have in store here. And then the other one I'll also give a shout out to is Two-Face, number five. I've been loving this series. I think maybe a little more than you guys, from Christian Ward and Fabio Veras. So
I've been loving it as well. It's a strain. It's just, it keeps changing my expectations in a way that has made me lean into it more. I like it. It's just always surprising what's coming out of it.
Well, all those books and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out 9 a.m.
What are the odds?
Comic Book Club feed and the Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We want to thank Aubrey Sinnerson. Don't forget to check out Free Planet coming out.
Yeah, check it out.
Image Comics. Next week on the show, Ivan Cohen is going to be here to talk about giant size wacky races from Dynamite.
Yes.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news program. Taking a break this week, but usually Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We're talking about episodes of Daredevil Born Again, so check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Go Joe!
Special guest speak. So grab your grin, hammer. Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.